watching the clouds roll away.
Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua, Three Men and a Microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages. Introducing now, in the corner of Case's Mini Storage Plaza, wearing camouflage, boxers, and smoking a cigar, hailing from Canandaigua, New York, Corporal Tim Thornton's the all-new The Military Exchange. The Military Exchange is proud to present over 5,000 feet of pure 100% military. The Military Exchange is your source for all your military needs and proudly supports active reserve and former military, VFWs, legions, and leagues, Boy Scouts, Sea Cadets, Civil Air Patrol, and your family. Presenting cigars fresh from our plantation in the Dominica, collectibles, t-shirts, hoodies, and ball caps, rank and insignia uniforms for parade, security, and law enforcement, camouflage clothing, outerwear, wool pants, parkas, and field jackets, camping backpacks, tents, and sleep systems, vintage clothing and gear, Class A's past and present, tactical and survival gear, antiques and airsoft, brand new and pre-enjoyed military camouflage and boots. Check out our military talk show at IronMikesMX.com. 5,000 feet to pure 100% military in Canandaigua, New York. Welcome to Canandaigua 1310 WOKR, and this is Civil War Radio. Can I tell you something? Got to tell you one thing. If you expect the freedom that you say is yours, prove to me that you deserve it. Help us to preserve it, or being free will just be words and nothing more. Welcome back. This is Civil War Radio, and Three Men in a Microphone. Not sure where we're going to put this segment. It was interrupted with Penny the Kangaroo from Wildlife Rock Stars. We started with Scope, President Tim Andrews, and his take on what's going on today with our gun rights. And now, Armin Marinetti, Melissa Walker, myself, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Civil War Radio, where I guarantee we will be civil.
Yes, if you remember from our last meeting, we decided that we were going to try to tackle the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments this week, which are often known as the Reconstruction or the ABC Amendments. I used to use that little acronym ABC so my students would remember the importance of these. They all came about at the end of the Civil War. The 13th Amendment is called the A Amendment, which stands for abolish slavery and servitude, which we'll talk about in a minute. The 14th Amendment is referred to as the B Amendment because it states that if you were born here in America, you're a citizen by birth. So B is for born here, you're a citizen by birth. Okay, and then we'll probably focus more time on the 14th Amendment because it's very lengthy and it's being used constantly. It's probably one of the most used amendments in our U.S. Constitution. And then the 15th Amendment is a little bit shorter. It's called the C Amendment. And the short way to remember it means C for can vote. Okay. So, yeah, we're going to take a little break from the Federalist, Anti-Federalist football gaming. I need more time to research, and I'm apologizing, Tim, because I didn't have any time at all to research. Most of this is going to come from memory and using this as a source. It's the U.S. Constitution, what it says, what it means, a hip pocket guide by the justicelearning.org and the Annenberg Foundation. So that's what we're going to use as our source today. You know, Tim, I've been spending a lot of time on the road. I haven't touched the computer since early Monday morning. And then after Easter, and then at 9 o'clock, I helped my son, Sean, load up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
followed him all the way down to another state where you kept him safe on the highway and helped him load all the furniture.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you looked around and you were part of the furniture. They're so busy settling in and doing stuff. I got to step over you. You know.
So I left, what was it? Today's Thursday. I can't keep track of time. I don't know.
He left his whole box here.
Wednesday morning at about 8:30 in the morning and drove, stopped about every four and a half hours, made three stops, and got in here Wednesday night around 9:30 at night, ran into snow flurries from about Williamsport, Pennsylvania, right up to Prattsburg, south of Naples. Going up that hill from 390 through Prattsburg, I couldn't even see the road. I mean, there was a dusting of snow on there. I was following somebody else's tracks.
Oh, you followed the bad snow in then?
Yeah, I did. And then by the time I got over the hill, heading into Naples, down the hill into Naples, it cleared up. So from Naples into Canandaigua, the ride wasn't too bad. Every now and then there'd be a gust of wind, but so that's why I feel and look and sound this way.
A little road ragged or something they call it.
My legs are numb.
They're from sitting all that time.
Yep.
How long was the ride?
It took me 13 hours. Yeah, 13 hours. I made two stops, got out, stretched my legs, had a cup of coffee, grabbed something light to eat, got back in and got gas. We tried to use the 2 out of 3 rule. Are you familiar with that? When you make a stop on the road.
Oh, you got to do 2 out of 3 things?
At least 2 out of 3 things. If you can do all three, it'd be get gas, get food, and use the bathroom.
Yep.
So if you could do 2 out of 3, that was a successful stop. So I was focusing on 3 out of 3. So I was doing okay. All right. So let's go to the 13th Amendment.
Okay.
It's a short one. It has two sections. I'm going to read the words because I find them helpful. You're going right to the source. So on the 13th Amendment, Section 1 states, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction, the United States jurisdiction. Section 2 states that Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. So, a little bit of history. What does this mean? Back in 1863, Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation. And that, I'm going to read again because it's so well written. The proclamation provided, quote, all persons held as slaves are and henceforward shall be free. But because the proclamation did not address slaves held in northern states, there were questions about its validity. Following the end of fighting on February 1, 1865, Congress passed the 13th Amendment, and it was ratified in December of 1865. The 13th Amendment is the first of the three Reconstruction-era amendments. So, the key about this is that we often hear about the slavery, but the servitude part is overlooked often. And let me just quote a Supreme Court decision. It's titled Henry Slaughter-House Cases. I'm not familiar with that, and I haven't had time to research it, so I'm just going to use this as my source. But, quote, in this decision, it says the amendment forbids any other kind of slavery, nor hereafter if Mexican peonage, which is the practice of forcing someone to work against one's will to pay off a debt, or the Chinese coolie labor system shall develop slavery of the Mexican or Chinese race within our territory, this amendment may safely be trusted to make it void. All right? So the amendment looked, peonage is one of those words that, you know, you can find it in the Old Testament. It means a debt slave. So if you can't pay off your debt, they put you to work and you become an indentured servant to the person.
When was that written? Right after the Civil War?
This was written in a Supreme Court case testing the validity of the 14th Amendment. I'm sorry, the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment.
Right.
So it would be after the Civil War. Yeah. You know, I don't see a year for this. I'm surprised for that particular case. And I haven't had time to research that case. So, again, it just states it. And if you want to do your own research.
So it was put into writing. It's against the law to enslave any of those races.
Oh, any race.
Any race.
Any person. Any citizen.
Because, you know, it does seem like from that period back in history, a race of color was, you know, I hate to say it, but when you watch the movies and you see how things are portrayed, you know, they were on the level of a, the words can't come out of my mouth, of like a farm animal.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, you know, you wouldn't try to hurt a farm animal, but you had the right to do something to a farm animal, I suppose, you know, like put it down or whatever, restrict it and stuff like that. And then you got the Irish who were definitely indentured servants.
Mm-hmm.
And so they eventually took that long in history to come out of that.
Right. So all people are covered by this 13th Amendment. I'm going to read the last paragraph of what this means. In more recent cases, the Supreme Court has defined involuntary servitude broadly to forbid work forced by the use or threat of physical restraint or injury or through law. But the Supreme Court has rejected claims that define mandatory community service, taxation, and the draft as involuntary servitude. So they decline those particular situations as being involuntary servitude.
You know how the Navy used to get their manpower?
I
always heard this to be true. Get them drunk at a bar, they walk out back, you slap them on the back of the head with a blackjack, they wake up on ship while it's already out in the ocean, and they go, welcome to the Navy.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but that would fit that law. You know, you're not allowed to draft, you know, involuntarily.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I wonder how that worked to Vietnam then.
I don't know.
Because there's a lot of guys who didn't want to go.
Yeah.
But the ones that left and ran to Canada.
Well, they're excluding the draft. They're excluding the draft. You can be drafted.
I heard you wrong.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah, those later Supreme Court cases said that you can be drafted. You can make mandatory community service a requirement. And, of course, taxation, which we'll hopefully get to.
Everyone's enslaved for that.
That's what I think. We'll get to that next week, taxation.
Okay. Yeah, that's the 16th, right?
Yeah, that's the 16th Amendment. So should we move on? Did we beat that A Amendment up? Abolished slavery. That's the key. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery.
And it abolished slavery everywhere that was considered the United States.
Yes, and its territories. Yes.
Nice.
Yep. Okay, moving on to the 14th Amendment, which is very lengthy. There are four sections. They're thick. I'm not going to read this. Okay, so I'm just going to highlight some of the important things that came from the 14th Amendment, because you do hear that used a lot today. The reason being is it gave the federal government more authority over the states. with regards to due process. Our scope friends often talk about due process, which simply states that you can't deprive a person of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. You can't just come and take people's stuff away without having a legal reason to do it and then providing them a process of law to defend themselves, to get their stuff back, to prove that they own it lawfully. And I believe in listening to the men from Scope, they talk about that all the time, especially with regards to firearms. You can't just come in and take people's property without having the law behind you.
Right.
Okay? So the due process means that we have our day in court. We have our legal system to protect us, not just to prosecute. And let me just fast forward, because I had a chance to listen to talk radio a lot as I was driving. And one of the issues that kept coming up is President Trump might talk to the special counselor there. I keep forgetting his name.
Mueller.
And a lot of people, attorneys like Alan Dershowitz, who is no conservative person whatsoever, is saying, don't do it. It's a setup. If you talk to them, they'll find something to hang on you. So that's the due process of law. He doesn't have to talk to them.
Yeah, and you have to be a wordsmith like Bill Clinton to get away with talking to someone, you know, in that position like Mueller, mm-hmm. and not somehow. Like, remember that one we talked about? The lady said in front of Congress, I shouldn't have even brought it up because I don't remember it, but she worded something like, oh, I plead the fifth.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes. That was Lois Lerner from the IRS, who we'll probably talk about more next week. But she made an opening statement about her doing nothing wrong. And then after, when she started to get questioned, she started pleading the fifth. And that's when I think it's Trey Gowdy, who's a congressman out of South Carolina, said, whoa, whoa, whoa. He used to be a prosecutor. He said, wait a minute. You can't do that. You already began your testimony. So you're supposed to plead the fifth throughout the whole testimony, but you can't just say what's good about what you did and then say, I'm not going to tell you about the bad stuff I did.
Yeah, right. So, but see, that's the way you got to be.
Yeah.
You have to be super – I mean, I'm not saying – President Trump can't do it, but you know, I would rather walk in and say, you know what, this isn't something that I'm going to do, because mm-hmm. you're right. You could twist something I said, or I might misspeak, I might allude to something, and then I've perjured myself. Or, you know, the whole point of the Fifth, especially the Fifth Amendment, is to not speak, to not perjure yourself, or mm-hmm. you know. Well, I could go on, but I really think the Fifth Amendment starts somewheres in the back of your head when you've stepped into something illegal,
mm-hmm.
not after you got caught or you've had to come forward and say, this just happened. I'm more of a libertarian on the Fifth.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, so the point would be, I had a guy say this in the store once, that he would plead the Fifth before he committed the act.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if he was to stop a guy robbing his house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ready for this? He wouldn't turn in the body.
Yeah, I remember talking about this.
I mean, it was so shocking. Everybody turned and looked at him and said, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And he said, why not? I'm taking the fifth from the very beginning of an action, and I'm not going to turn myself in at all.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. Maybe that's just crazy talk. But you can see where, again, if you're on this witness stand or you're being talked to by a special prosecutor, words are everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And words sometimes are said with a different thought in my mind than are heard by the people listening. They may have a different connotation in their mind.
Well, I've always heard, too, like you're saying, if you're going to start testimony and then all of a sudden say, I plead the fifth, the judge can say, no, sorry, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or you're going to make yourself as a hostile witness, and then that just doesn't go for the court.
Well, here's a simple example, too. There are people listening to us on the radio, and I'm sure they're not understanding every word we say as we meant it to be understood because of our own difference in life, styles, culture, education, and they can't see us on the radio. Right. So when you talk to somebody face-to-face, their face tells you what they mean as well. Their body motions. Yeah.
I had a law professor at SUNY Geneseo, and Professor Deutsch, he's R.I.P. Very great. He was a great professor. Mm-hmm. But he always said that if you start pleading the fifth, you're guilty.
Yeah, I've heard that. But others say, no, it's my constitutional protected right for me not to have to say anything. Because when they arrest you using the Miranda, what you say may and will be used against you
in a court of law.
So, you know, I've heard of cases, too. I don't know how they turned out where people don't say anything. They don't say a thing.
If you've ever been questioned by law enforcement, and I'll preface it by like this. Call them up. Not everybody. This doesn't apply to everybody. You know, you always got to say nice things like that. But you call them up and you say, you know what? I saw something suspicious, and I want to tell you about this guy. Who are you? How are you involved? What are you doing? What are you gaining out of this? Did you go there first? Did you come back? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, you're the bad guy. So, probably against what your professor would say, right then, I would say, you know what? I'm done talking to you. That's it.
Yeah.
You've messed up this whole thing of me trying to help you, so I'm done. I'm not saying another word because somehow you're turning this into me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people do use law enforcement as a weapon to get even with other people, but some people just want to help, and they have that bad approach. Not all of them, of course, but some of them. And I'm against that approach. I think that approach is the wrong way to take anybody trying to give you a tip.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's people like me and what's the lady from Bewitch?
Samantha?
No. Mrs. Kravitz.
Oh, Gladys. The nosy neighbor.
Me and Mrs. Kravitz like to look out the window and say, hey, look at that guy.
Well,
Mrs. Kravitz from Bewitch.
What was your husband's name?
Well, it wasn't Archie.
Wait.
Our...
Say Max.
Oh, these kids,
I can't remember.
She's just got her Edith Bunker mixed up with Bewitched and
Gladys Kravitz.
Well, it would be Mr. Kravitz to you.
Yeah, here you go, Mr. Kravitz.
You said, what's his name?
I
no, but she called him by name. And...
Oh, he was a sub actor.
All right, there's three more sections to this 14th Amendment. The second one, I'm going to go over it quickly. It's all dealing with representation. So, in general, it lays out how we're supposed to choose our congressional representatives. And in order to choose them back then, when this was put together in the 1860s, you had to choose... An elected official that would be male, 21 years old, and a U.S. citizen. In order to choose the representative, the voter had to be male, 21 years old, and the person that had to be a U.S. citizen to vote.
Now, that's not the case anymore, right? Because
you could be 18. You could be 18 now. And the U.S. citizen thing is...
That only applies to the presidency.
I don't know why that would
be. Arnold Schwarzenegger was a governor.
Yeah, but I think he may be a U.S. citizen, even though he wasn't born here. Naturalized U.S. citizen. Yeah. So,
Well, okay.
Moving on to Section 3.
They should move that voting age up to 21.
I agree. And to talk about it briefly, I don't have a problem with a voter being able to read or write. But one of the ways the 14th Amendment was extended to states is that a lot of states after this was passed started instituting poll taxes and literacy tests, especially in the South, which meant in order to vote, you had to prove that you can read and write, which I really don't have a problem with. And a poll tax meant that you had to prove that you had some substance, because at one time it was only property owners that had the right to vote, because they had something to lose if the government decided to take away their property. Remember, it's to protect your life, liberty, and property.
Yep.
So that's all changed now. Some of the changing took place almost 100 years later, from the 1870s to the 1970s, where in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voters' Rights Act of 1965 affected a lot of those southern states to get rid of these requirements.
Which must be why they didn't want to sell land to a damn Yankee. If he didn't sell land to a damn Yankee, then maybe he couldn't vote. And then that tradition just kept going forward.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. Now, I heard, again, listening to a lot of talk radio, there's a guy from Vision, that Mexican cable TV network. I can't think of the name of it. Univision.
Altamundo?
No, it's called Univision. It's actually is the name of it. And he has been asked to leave or ignored at many press conferences, because he's very aggressive when it comes to asking questions, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he has dual citizenship, and he was being interviewed by one of the new young guys on Fox, and he gets a chance to vote in Mexico and the United States.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I said. How's that work?
Have dual citizenship from Germany and the U.S.
So they can vote in both? Does that seem right?
Well, I mean, you know, we can't do that here in New York. You can't be a snowbird and vote in Florida and New York. So
you can't do it in states, right? Right.
I guess if you own property in both countries, and then you don't have to own property in the United States, but
yeah,
I guess if you have an interest, but it would seem like can you imagine the amount of people that can influence a vote?
You think?
Were you saying last week about some woman in, I don't know, she held office somewhere that wants the world to be able to vote for our president?
I didn't say that, but I heard something like that on the news. Yeah, there's all kinds of different ways of taking down our nation's borders without actually physically crossing them. So that would be another way, is to, the UN could pass laws that we're going to be subject to.
Well, they can try.
Yeah.
We don't have to follow them.
Now, correct.
Now.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
I think even President Trump has said that the UN should be, we should remove ourselves from the United Nations.
Yep.
Which people have been saying for as long as I can live.
Mm-hmm. Section 3, briefly again, deals with insurrection or rebellion. And if you're involved in that and you're in an elected position, such as Congress, you can be removed by 2/3 vote of each House of Congress. So some people might question relationships some of our Congress people have had with countries that we don't always get along with. And I'm being vague on purpose because I don't have any statistics other than what you hear tossed out there. And I'm always leery when you hear things tossed out because you don't know how much of it is rumor. So going back to what Ben Franklin said about believe nothing you hear and half of what you read, something like that. So then the fourth section has to do with public debt and how you could surrender your pension and also any debt, which a savings bond is. If you have a U.S. savings bond, you loaned your money to the United States government, and they promise to pay you back by the terms of that bond. It's usually over a long period of time. You might get double your money back, but they have to hold on to that. So that Section 4 is a warning that if you're found to be a rebel and involved in insurrection, that you might lose your pension, government pension, and they may not have to pay back any debt that they owe you, such as from a U.S. savings bond.
I'm already losing my pension in a way because my Social Security, Congress took it. You know how Congress dipped into the Social Security fund for retirement?
Yeah.
But they're still paying.
They're still paying right now, and it's mostly going to a little bit of economics and finance. It's mostly because they have the revenue coming in to meet the debt obligation. So think of it as yourself or your business. You might be able to go borrow money for a house as long as you can prove that you're going to be able to pay the mortgage payment. But you may not have much other value or assets other than the house. But according to their formula, you can make your mortgage payments. And back years ago, it used to be roughly 28% of your gross revenue was the formula that banks used if you had no other credit. Then if you had credit cards, they tacked on another 8%. So they would say 36% of your revenue, you should be able to use it for mortgage and other small debt, not major debt, credit card debt, things like that, car loan. Okay, so the government has a formula. They're always great at adding and taking away and stuff like that. So as long as they can make the payments, it may not even be on principal because you see our debt is up over $22 trillion. So they're not paying it down at all. And we just went into a deficit, which means we're going to spend $1.3 trillion more than's coming in. So imagine you operating like that. Let's say for round figures you make $50,000 a year, but you're spending $70,000.
You got to run out of stuff. I had a bad year in business like that, or a couple bad years, and you know what happened was I spent down my inventory.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then you had to rebuild that inventory up.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had that inventory.
Now I saw this in the Democrat and Chronicle a couple weeks ago before I left. And they're odd statistics, and there's no backup to them. It's just a newspaper article. But I read in Monroe County, family of four, two adults, two children, average annual cost of living in Monroe County, $93,000 a year.
Wow.
Now, I don't know, again, if that's both people working to bring it up to that range. The average income in Monroe County, and it didn't give specifics, it just said average income is $73,000 a year. There's a $20,000 gap. It didn't say per family, it didn't say per person, it said average income in Monroe County.
But no, the average debt is 90.
Average living cost. Yeah, cost of living, not debt. Cost of living. So I'm scratching my head and going, either I'm reading this wrong or I don't understand it. See, but how can you live with a $20,000 deficit each and every year? You got to borrow it.
That's what Melissa and I said on a show prior, that we're the working poor. You know, you work and you work and you're bringing your money in.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to the store, can you really afford steak? No.
No.
Can you really, do you keep your car full every day? No. Do you pay all your bills? You know, you may pay all your bills, but there's so much more that life was supposed to be about. You know, having a vacation, having a good structure over your head, having balanced food. And you cheat those other things to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And you exist.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's something that our parents and our grandparents had to do and generations before that. But you have to sit down with pencil and paper sometime. And there's where going to school and learning basic math and basic finances is important. And we've talked about this often. They don't teach that anymore in school, how to balance a checkbook, how to manage a credit card, how to apply for an auto loan. Some schools do still, you know, with a business course. I actually saw that in Wood Library, Five Star Bank is going to offer like an hour and a half of basic finance management, such as what I just mentioned, which I think is great, and it's geared for high school kids. I think it said like 6th through 12th graders. So, you know, they're just starting to get to that age where they might start earning some summer money, and they should know how to manage it so that they're not spending more than coming in. So
I'd like to see somebody, they'd have to step out of the ranks, but a car dealer or like a car dealer salesman.
Mm-hmm.
Really explain all the things that go into the price of the car.
Oh, geez.
You know, what you took for your car,
yeah.
The coverages, the extra add-ons. I mean, that is a circus and a half.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And every time I buy a car and I think, okay, this time I got it, you didn't get it all.
Nope.
I didn't get it all, that's for sure.
That's a good point.
Those yeah. That would be, to me, that would be... Besides what you just said, I knew a lawyer who said he got so tired of being ripped off by lawyers
mm-hmm.
that he became one so he could protect himself.
Yeah.
He said, it's crazy how much you need and how little they're really telling you, so he became one.
Yeah.
And he was a good lawyer. He helped me several times. He always took care of us.
Yeah. That's it. Before we move on to the 15th Amendment, which is a short one, I just want to touch again on that born or naturalized citizen because it's very topical these days. So what does naturalized mean? I mean, born makes sense, but what does naturalized mean? So I'm going to read a little bit again so I don't confuse the issue, but we talked about this case before, the Dred Scott case. The right of citizenship in the 14th Amendment was intended to overturn the case of Dred Scott versus Sanford, a decision that had long been considered as one of the Supreme Court's worst mistakes. And that was in the 1850s. And some people say it's one of the things that lit up the Civil War. It's another one of the things that caused friction between the North and the South. Dred Scott was born into slavery, argued that he should be granted freedom from the family that claimed ownership over him because he had lived in free states and thus had become a citizen of the United States before returning to Missouri, a state where slavery was sanctioned. Chief Justice Taney, denying Scott's appeal, held that African Americans were not citizens and therefore were, quote, not included and were not intended to be included under the word citizens, end of quote. By specifically granting citizenship to all persons born or naturalized, the 14th Amendment has not only guaranteed citizenship to former slaves, but to most children born within the United States, even if the child's parents are not and cannot become citizens.
So, what happens if you're born a child in the United States and your parents are not citizens?
By birth, you're considered a citizen of the United States.
So where does that leave the DACA kids?
If they were born here, they're citizens. If they were brought here, they're not. So if they were already born...
Right.
And their parents weren't born here. They were brought here. Then they're not citizens unless the law is written to make them citizens. according to the Constitution, you have to be born here. And this is what you've heard of the term, what do they call it? I want to use the word chain migration. And it means that you're making a link by coming across a pregnant woman coming across a border into the United States, having a child, and saying, my child's a U.S. citizen. Okay? And now they have to plead to be allowed to stay and care for their child.
But not only that, if they come here illegally and she's pregnant, you can't deny them health care for a pregnant woman. So there goes more money.
It's money, but I'll tell you what. I couldn't turn my back on someone. You know, I mean, you give them the good health care, pack a lunch, aim them south, say, you know, we helped you out. Here's a bologna sandwich and a gallon of water. See ya.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's horrible, but at least help them. You know, I mean, yeah. you can't deny them. We're not that poor, and we're not that backwoods, and we're not that mean. You know, we would definitely help them. The problem is that they hide within society, and we don't know, you know, who were really, you know. Well, you know, the big thing is, if they were paying taxes because they were legitimate citizens and they weren't working under the table, you might could say, okay, you've worked, you're doing good, you know, you haven't broken any laws. Yeah, sure. Why don't we file for citizenship? You know, we caught you, but now we're going to get you to stay. That's not exactly what happens. You know, we get the ones who are criminals and they're repeat criminals, and then you get the ones who stay under the table. And let me tell you, Americans do this too. They stay so far under the table all their lives while collecting benefits that they're completely ruining our economic system. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about white Americans.
Yeah.
They do that too much to the point where, you know, half of us are working and half of us are not, and the ones that are working are carrying the load for the ones that are not.
Yeah.
And that's not just illegals.
Again, let's fast forward to today, how this is still relevant. There is talk, it's been reported in the news, that certain states like California and maybe even New York, if you're a resident in their state, not a citizen, a resident, so you might have a green card. You're a citizen from another country, but you have permission to work here. They want to give you voting rights. And the argument is, you pay taxes here, so you should be able to vote on your representation. That's the argument in favor of giving an alien, somebody from another country, not another planet, their say in our Democratic Republic.
Right.
So, in, you know, again, attorneys can make an argument out of anything. And
you know, California was allowed into the Union with very special permission. And one of those things is, it involves strictly their control over illegal migration or illegal immigrants. And stuff like Sanctuary City, that trying to get pass the legislation so that illegals can vote. All of that actually breaks the agreement that we had with California to allow them to come into America or yeah. be part of the Union. Yeah. So it was just brought up on the news this morning. And, you know, I'd like to know more about it, but, you know, we're not going to let California succeed, but we could also stop federal aid going to California because they're not holding up to their bargain.
Yep. It just recently, Donald Trump stated he was going to send the National Guard to the border because there was a convoy of people heading towards the border between Mexico and the United States.
Yeah, Mexico wouldn't keep them out from their side.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up from the south,
mm-hmm.
south of Mexico,
mm-hmm.
so South America. And now they're headed towards our border, And I really, when I heard he was sending in the military to intervene, mm-hmm. I had hoped it was going to be an active duty force like the U.S. Marines.
Yeah, which he can't do.
He has power over the Marine Corps.
Okay.
He can take the Marine Corps and do with it as he wills for a certain amount of days, I believe. There is some restriction.
Yeah.
But then Congress has to approve it. But he can mobilize the Marine Corps immediately under his own power.
I'm guessing.
But he's using the National Guard,
yeah.
Which has got to be what? The National Guard from where?
Good question. California, Texas, Arizona.
I got a phone call last night from the National Guard. Got my information somehow, wanted to know if I was interested.
Ah.
Well, habla español, go on down.
I do speak Spanish.
I didn't hear it.
Now, Tim, going back to what you were saying about...
Yo sabe español.
Yo sabe.
I know.
Oh, I know. I clan a Deutsch.
Mi guapo gatito.
I had a woman come on in the store. I got to tell you about this. I don't even think she's a missionary. She goes to South Africa. And I wanted to tell this, so I guess now is a good time. And she brings blankets and mosquito netting and things like that to the highest point of Africa, the highest mountain. There's a village up there that for decades she's been doing it on her own, helping these people. Little white woman. She goes there all by herself. She's usually the only white person when she travels. And she still has to get to her destination where nobody knows her. Well, where they know her there, but they don't know her in between. And I said, well, how do you travel over there into that culture and get around? Doesn't she go? And I go, get out of here. She laughed and she goes, I speak the language.
Yeah.
So that's she may be a guest on the show in the future when she comes back. But she spoke that African language.
Yeah, that's the Bushmen from, not Ethiopia, someplace on the west, east side of Africa. I can't think of it.
Start with an A?
I can't think of it. Yeah, well, better bring a translator.
Or some, I loved it.
So, one more
okay.
of the ABC. This is the 15th Amendment, which is the C for... Now you're a citizen, right? We did the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So if I was an indentured servant, which usually this is a general statement, worked this way. Let's say I was in a foreign country and I had family here, or a business opportunity here, I could come over, they'd pay my way, and I might have to work it off. I become an indentured servant. So my debt is to work for the person who paid my way here for a period of time. And often it was 7 to 10 years, depending on the work I did. And then I would be a free person after that. So that's done away with. As far as the 15th Amendment is concerned, that's Section 1. Section 2 is real short. The Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. So I guess that's just a way to emphasize the fact that Congress is taking control of these issues and the states have taken a back seat. So these are called the Reconstruction Amendments. They came about after the Civil War, and it's when the federal government started to grow more and more. And just as a tease for next week, I believe the first income tax ever imposed, and it was temporary, was during the Civil War, were to raise money for the Union troops. It was... proposed and passed, I believe, by Abraham Lincoln, that we have a temporary income tax so that they could afford the troops to fight in the Southern people say it, the war of Northern aggression. That's how they say it.
Yeah. So who paid for this federal government before taxation? How did they get their money?
There were other forms of taxation. It wasn't income tax.
Oh,
there
like
was tariff taxes.
Road tolls.
There was road tolls. Well, we talked about it. I can't remember the article right now, but we talked about how it was based on population and then the states from sales tax and other ways of, you know, they had to pay to the federal government. But there was no income tax. I can't remember the article. And again, I apologize because I'm still in a fog.
Are there taxes on how many animals you own on a farm, too? I could be misspoken.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you ever hear the song Taxman by the Beatles?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that runs it down. I one time printed out a list of taxes that are paid here in the United States, and the list was like 3,000 different items listed that there's some sort of tax on. Hey, we're paying tax right now for the use of these devices, the computer. Speaking of computer, because of the wind yesterday, my computer is out again.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know yet. Haven't gotten around to trying to fix it. But I use Spectrum for the cable's out as well. So the cable and the internet are out again.
My wife's power was out. She called me from work.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, we have no power, no lights, no heat. Well, maybe she had heat, but... and I said, oh, I go, let me call you right back. I got a bunch of people in the store. 5 hours later, it hit my head again. I went, somebody said something about power out. I went, oh, no, Kim. I called her up. I go, hey, how's that? She goes, 5 hours. 5 hours. The power's back on. Thank you very much.
And I go, you said I was working on it.
I was like, oh, I told her. I said, I honestly forgot. Because she didn't call me up. You know, worried. So that was Armin Marinetti, Corporal Tim Thornton, Melissa Walker, and this was Civil War Radio talking about the amendments. And we'll have which amendment when we come back next week?
That'd be the 16th Amendment, which enshrined the federal income tax.
Okay. And we'll be right back after these messages. No, don't go.
Another tactical to practical moment has been brought to you by Iron Mike's Military Exchange. Ammo cans. What an awesome box. It's all metal, seals watertight, and is nearly indestructible. It's so watertight, people bury them in the desert with water, so they will have water later. The USGI ammo can. That's the United States government issue ammo can. It's made in the United States to carry ammo, but it does so much more. It's a bear box used by the Boy Scouts of America. Geocaching, coins, cigars, toolbox, hazardous materials, CDs, and anything precious you want to keep safe. They even come in your choice of color, olive drab. This tactical to practical moment was brought to you by Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua, New York.
Check them out online at ironmikes.co.
Springtime weather forecast. Rainy, gray skies with a slight chill in the a.m. Tactical to practical. Military rain gear on sale now at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Camouflage rubber rain pants. USGI issue, only $19.99.
The Military Exchange.
It's interesting that technology has brought us the World Wide Web and the internet. And I think about those two ending words, web and net. You ever see what a spider uses to catch its prey?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quite an intricate web.
Yes.
Like a net.
Yes. So are we being captured by technology to the point where another storm goes through and blows out somebody's phone and computer? And let's say it doesn't get fixed in 5 hours. Let's say it takes 5 days. Will we have chaos in the streets? Will people lose their ability to function as a civil society?
I think so, because it's become, well, not becoming, it is an addiction for many people.
Good word. An addiction. You need it. It's a fix.
I think you could get away. I don't think there'd be civil unrest over Facebook. There would definitely be. Because at this point, I'm not used to calling on the phone and asking the bank what my bank's balance is. I'm used to looking it up myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll always notice this. Whenever there's a gas shortage and there's a problem, it usually takes about 3 hours for the for there to be some violence between one person and another person trying to get gas, trying to get food. It takes about 3 hours for humanity to break down.
Wow, that's short. That's nothing.
That's crazy.
And we and I heard a little bit about what the gentleman from Scope was talking about, the shooting, the most recent shooting with the YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the woman was upset because her
parents called the police before
and
this
said,
ever took place.
Yeah, and she was actually stopped on the YouTube property. Is again, this is all listening to guys and women on the radio. You know, it could be dangerous. Even though we're on the radio, it could be dangerous because it is a fancy way of transmitting rumor and hearsay quickly. Right? I mean, so you're off?
I was off the whole time.
Oh, boy.
I don't even know when I stopped. You laugh, and I could have ruined everything.
Oh, dear. Let's
start over.
I don't know when I clicked it off. So, you know, I agree. And the YouTube... you know, the YouTube shooter is one of the first female shooters, and that opens things up besides the weapon,
mm-hmm.
besides the fact that I want to say she might have been foreign.
Uh-huh.
Asian descent, it looked like.
Yeah.
So, and we have our own Judge Estacio was stopped at Dick's Sporting Goods for trying to buy a shotgun, and... She did also receive a pay raise for working one day this past year. She got the same raise, I guess, everybody else did, which was
about
10 to 11,000.
She had a live feed on Facebook about her raise and how she was explaining the reason why. She was just on a rampage, and she really needs to go to a meeting with me.
I think a lot of these things, like going to Dick's and probably knowing that she's not allowed to buy a shotgun, but proving the point that she can't, and then denied her, say, Second Amendment rights, whether that's justified or not, I think a lot of what she's doing is building up for a bigger lawsuit against probably... our state, and then an excellent book for her to write and then make millions. So, you know, this, she hasn't even lost her income. She doesn't seem to want to show up for work. She doesn't, not trying very hard, I don't think, to become, get back to her judgeship.
Sorry.
So, no, and you know, that's not fair. You don't know that she's not trying to be sober, but she said she comes from a drinking family, that it's part of her culture. You know, and I got to say this about alcoholism or the lack of, you know, a person that gets a DWI doesn't make them 100% an alcoholic. They could be someone who just made a bad choice. Tune in every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m., for three men and a microphone and a lady. Hear all about local news, politics, fishing report, and sports, as well as all the talk about town and the scuttlebutt in the city. To keep up on the show, stay connected and visit us on Facebook at Canandaigua 1310, Three Men and a Microphone. Presented each week, Saturday 8 to 10 a.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. Sponsored by the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. And to catch up on past episodes, go to IronMikesMX.com or WOKR 1310. Golden, golden, golden.